Welcome back to the Ramble Room. I'm Ken, and Diane's here. And along with us, joining us one more time, is Barbara Sjurstedt. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We had talked, and you heard a little bit about it in the interview that we published last time, about some of the music that Barbara and Gary played together. And we kind of, I find it really hard to narrow it down to just one or two pieces, so we picked four. And we thought we'd make a show out of that. If piano music is not your thing, catch us next time. If it is not your thing, it needs to become so. So this might be a way to get started.
That's a good idea.
I think so. And I think you'll be surprised at some of the music. Now, I want to stress that what you're hearing is two pianists playing one piano simultaneously. So that's why they have the term four hands.
Four now, hands on one keyboard.
Yes, there is not room on an 88 keyboard for four hands. I know, I've tried it. It's horrible.
You have to sit at a different angle.
Yes.
Than if you're playing solo piano. And it becomes very interesting to play a scale.
I'm sure.
But it can be done, but it does take a lot of coordination.
Victor Borge used to sit at a different angle.
All the time.
I remember, yeah, rather than being 90 degrees straight up, he would lean back about 45 degrees or whatever. But you're talking orientation toward middle C. Who gets to determine, is it a measure of arm strength or will, or who gets to determine where's my half of the bed, so to speak?
Well, actually, the way we started having me play the primo part, which is the part at the top of the keyboard, the part that's closest to the audience. I was playing most of what we played on the primo. But then one of the audience members came up to us one time and said, you know, it would be kind of nice to have you switch off so we could see your husband more. So we started doing that, and also we started playing pieces that had a little stretchier part for one of the pianists. So Gary's hands are bigger than mine. And so if there were large chord stretches, he would take whichever part those came in.
So the first piece that we want to play is from an opera called Petrushka.
It's not an opera, it's a ballet.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's
okay. You can find it on YouTube and you can watch different versions of it. It's amazing to see. But so this is a ballet. This is by Stravinsky, Igor Fyodorovich Stravinsky.
Igor.
Igor. Is it Frankenstein or Frankenstein?
Well, you know, I was pronouncing Prokofiev's first name for a long time as Sergei. Or no, as Serge.
Serge, yeah. Mm.
Because sometimes it's spelled that way.
His friends called him that.
Well, then one lady came up and said, you know, it's supposed to be pronounced Sergei. So I said, okay. I learned.
Okay, so who wrote this music then? You say it.
So Igor Stravinsky.
Very well. You sound like you've been to Russia.
I have a very good accent when I pronounce Russian. The trouble is, I don't have a very good vocabulary.
That's kind of like my German, but that's a whole other story. So go ahead, if you would, tell us just briefly a little bit about this ballet, maybe the story, and then also the circumstances of this recording, and maybe another anecdote or two about this particular piece.
Okay, so this piece comes from what's called three scenes from Petrushka. And the composer himself arranged these pieces for piano duet. And the first one is the one we're going to be playing for you, is the Russian dance. The ballet takes place at in a square in St. Petersburg during the Maslenitsa festival, which is the Russian equivalent of our Mardi Gras. So the Russian dance is very, very fast and has a lot of acrobatics. Unfortunately, you can't see it on the radio, but I was playing the secundo part in this.
Second part?
The second part, the part that's closest to the bass, bass part of the piano. And it's a very, very fast, exciting dance. This comes from a period in Stravinsky's life where he was writing for the Ballet Russe. And this was one of the ballets from that period, which also included The Rite of Spring. And we actually did a performance of Rite of Spring, but for the purposes of this program, here is The Russian Dance.
The second piece that we want to introduce, I'm not even going to attempt because I could probably say Glinka.
Glinka, of course.
Yeah, okay. But take it from there, and this thing rips.
Yes. My husband was always, first of all, the piece is called The Overture to Ruslan and Ludmila by Glinka. Ruslan and Ludmila was also a ballet. And an opera.
It is possible, right?
yes. But the most, one of the most famous overtures from Russian music, I'm talking about famous here in the United States, is this overture to Ruslan and Ludmila. And it's usually played by an orchestra, and it's very fast. My husband was always telling me I wasn't playing it fast enough. He wanted to play it faster than the Russian National Orchestra played it. Well, we did several recordings of it, and this is from one of the last concerts we did before he died. And he actually beat the timing of the Russian National Orchestra by about 4 or 5 seconds.
Did you finish with him?
I not only finished with him, I started with him. And it's very fast. I think you'll enjoy it very much because this also was arranged by the composer himself for piano duet.
Thank you.
Now, the next piece I got to choose. The last two were both Russian. And the reason being that we just had the interview about going to Russia and talking about the Russian people, so we wanted to include that. But here in America, we had a composer named Gershwin, and you all will be familiar, even if you don't know it by name, with the music to the Rhapsody in Blue. And trust me, this is kind of a long piece, but it is absolutely flat dab amazing.
And I wanted to say that the Russians absolutely adore George Gershwin's music. So we made sure that we played it when we were giving that concert in the Grand Palace. And this arrangement is not by Gershwin himself. It's by a friend of his named Henry Levine, who was arranging his music. And this particular arrangement is from 1943. I don't think it needs too much of an introduction. You'll recognize it.
Thank you. Thank you.
This last piece is by Louis Gottschalk, and I will let you introduce him and his music.
Louis Gottschalk was from New Orleans, and he was often compared to the composer Franz Liszt. They lived about the same time, and he actually went over to Paris for his musical education, and when he arrived at the Paris Conservatory, they laughed at him. They said, well, we're not going to teach you because you're from America. Americans don't play classical music. They don't write music. I guess they thought we were all just Indian fighters at that time. I shouldn't.
I'll fix that. We just got booted off the air.
Well, third time's the charm.
We don't have to do the whole thing.
You don't have to start over.
You don't have to start over.
Okay. Anyway, he performed at salons, places where the wealthy people would have musicians come and play. And he was discovered and studied outside the conservatory and became famous. So the music has a very American catchiness to it that's a little bit like early ragtime.
And it's called?
The name is Pasquinade.